From the bizarre world of the paranormal to the sinister secrets of the U.S. government, the Black Vault has become known worldwide as the premier spot for anything and everything conspiracy. Now, join me, John Greenwald Jr., as we dive into the research together in hopes to decipher these mysteries. This is the Black Vault Radio. That's right, this is the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr. Thank you so much for tuning in. Excited about today's show because we're bringing on Adam Johnson. Check him out online, www.ufophysical.com. Teaming up with a legend in the UFO field. You may have heard Ted Phillips on the Black Vault Radio, I would say about a month or two ago, talking about his research, many years in the field of ufology. Well, Adam is a youngster coming up in the field, very interested in this topic, and it's always exciting for me to bring on those youngsters in the field of ufology because, well, they're the future. Everybody wants youth in ufology. Well, Adam's it, and he's coming up right here on BVRN to talk about the Special Investigations Unit to Ted Phillips Center for Physical Trace Research, so stay tuned for Adam. Couple things, though, to talk about before we get rolling here. As many of you keep watch on that Black Vault Encyclopedia project, there are hundreds of UFO case files that have now gone online. I still urge any of you out there that are listening that may have UFO videos or photographs, you have no way to put them online. Well, hey, I can help you do that. I host everything for free. And when you go to the Black Vault Encyclopedia, please note not a single advertisement on that. It's for people to learn. And I'm not trying to profit off of anybody's work. There's going to be so many contributors from around the globe. There already is, including newspaper articles, photos, videos, all sorts of good stuff for you guys to download. Well, there's a ton of new UFO case files that I wanted to make note about. Case files from Ohio, Washington, D.C., Laconia, New Hampshire, Ontario, Canada, North Carolina, Ashgrove, Queensland, Australia, Lake Michigan, Illinois, Virginia, and many others. Please go on there, theblackvault.com. Again, www.theblackvault.com. Click on Encyclopedia right there on the front page. I urge you all, because I've said this a million times here on the radio, but I'm going to say it again. All of those case files that I just rattled off to you, they're all case files from the last, like, 30 days, I would say. Maybe 60 days on some cases. But that's how often this phenomenon is being seen around the globe. Well, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of more UFO case files that I am tirelessly trying to get on as quick as I can, trying to catch up with all this work. There's all sorts of things going on with the Black Vault. Another thing that you guys may have noticed, if not, I urge you all to definitely check this out. The CIA has declassified about 11,000 pages. 11,000 pages. Now, granted, that's a very small percentage of their holdings, but it's always encouraging when thousands of pages on something, anything, is declassified. This is about the Soviet, and I would say mostly communist research that the CIA was conducting from 1953 to 1973. Now, I don't know if the term think tank is appropriate for these types of reports, but it's very similar to a think tank type of approach on looking into Soviet leaders, the rise and fall of many of the dictators over there, who liked what and whom and who didn't and what problems there were. It's really a fascinating look inside the Cold War. And I've uploaded about 8 of the 11,000 pages. I've got them all programmed in, 100% of everything on the Soviet Union and 100% on Communist China has been uploaded. Make sure you take a look at that because there is, again, it's just an amazing, amazing look into history. I also urge you all, before I lose you to the first break and then Adam Johnson coming up, I want to hear from you, not only via email, but on my voicemail, area code 641-715-3900. Punch in extension 21580, then hit your pound button. You might even hear it on BVRN. Check it out online, theblackvault.com. Click on BVRN for that number again in case you missed it. Adam Johnson coming right up.
Action.
Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. This is your host, John Greenwald Jr. And let me waste no time in welcoming our guest this week, Adam Johnson, part of the Special Investigations Unit of Ted Phillips Center for Physical Trace Research. Adam, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on, John.
Well, absolutely. I've been trying to schedule this interview for weeks, and your busy schedule is getting in the way, and I'm not saying that in a negative way. In fact, that leads into my positive compliment. You are a young person in the field of ufology. I always love these shows to bring on those younger names and younger people in the field of ufology. You're actually currently in college. You're 21 years of age. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you are part of a team with really, if this is a word, I'm going to make it one if it's not, a ufological legend, Mr. Ted Phillips, who's been a former guest here on the Black Vault Radio. But you're part of this SIU team, or Special Investigations Unit, for Ted's Center for Physical Trace Research at the young age of 21 years old. First of all, congratulations. It sounds like you guys are doing an excellent job over there. But for those who don't know about your team yet, please let me know, what are you guys doing?
Well, first off, thanks a lot. And yes, it's been a great experience. Couldn't have a better teacher in Ted Phillips, where he was taught by, everyone knows, J. Allen Hynek.
Mm-hmm.
So getting that professional teacher is certainly a privilege that I feel very honored to have. Basically, the Center for Physical Trace Research Special Investigations Unit has been created to investigate active UFO sightings and posting findings along with images and video obtained during field expeditions onto our website, the UFOPhysicalWebsite.com. And basically, the team's primary purpose will be to insert itself into an active area that is exhibiting activity rather than after, you know, you find out about something occurring. So we try to throw ourselves really into the fire. And we're currently aware of two active areas in the central United States. And the SIU has five highly qualified researchers and has the only dive team in the U.S. geared toward the investigation of UFOs, USOs, and similar anomalies.
See, this is what's fascinating, and let me back you up, that you guys are the only ones that really, to me, that I've heard of, that are trying to get into the area that's an active area before things happen. So you guys can capture it on film, capture it on video, and actually do an on-site investigation, to where others usually go in, and it's still valid research, don't get me wrong, but they go in after the fact. You're trying to go in before.
Yeah, that's correct, and it's really exciting, and actually this coming weekend, this Saturday, me and a couple of my brothers are going to be helping us put together one of our DVDs that we're eventually going to have for sale, and it's presenting, you know, all this amazing data that we've been recovering from these sites that we're going to and investigating, and there haven't been any recent sightings there in the specific location that we're doing, but it's kind of hard to determine. That's why we put ourselves there, and we go there frequently just so we can capture this stuff. And we have some great video footage, and it's certainly some explosive stuff that no one's ever seen. And to me, I think it's probably, overall, probably one of the most intriguing UFO studies that I've ever heard of, and it's amazing to be a part of.
www.ufophysical.com is the website. Check it out. There's a 15-minute video about the team, kind of profiling a little bit about the work that you guys have done. Before I dive into that, and pardon the pun because I know you guys have the dive team, but before I delve into it, what really hooked you guys all up and created this idea to go out there and do this?
Well, it's actually kind of interesting. Let's see. I guess that the 2006 MUFON symposium,
mm-hmm.
that's actually where I met Ted Phillips, and that's actually where I met you the first
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there and got acquainted with Ted, and I was friends with two members, Tom Ferrario and Debbie Ziegelmeyer, and they're from Missouri also. And so I've already known them for about a year or so. And just talking with them and stuff and getting connected. After the symposium was over, we heard about the Sci-Fi Channel was looking to develop a new show, I guess, called UFO Hunters, and we kind of all came together, collaborated, and we're trying to see really if we could get picked up by Sci-Fi to profile our new team, but that didn't work out. But we just decided, you know what, we're going to stick with this, and we're going to do something different than everyone else, even the, you know, the TV shows out there, just like the UFO Hunters, I guess it's going to be coming out, and mm-hmm. we're actually going to throw ourselves into active areas where things are actually happening instead of going back to Roswell 50 years later where nothing's ever been found.
No, but I guarantee they're going to go back again, and they'll go back on the 65th anniversary and the 70th, and they're not going to find anything. I wish those producers that keep developing those shows would figure that out, but I'm sorry to interrupt
you. Yeah, it's pretty sad, and actually myself, as a college student, that's actually what I'm getting into. I'm getting into video production, and it's pretty sad that that's all they can think to really do.
Exactly. And the sad thing is being in entertainment, that they're actually selling it. I frown on that every single day when I wake up, because there are so many great ideas, like your team, for example, like going out there with a UFO legend, with youth, with experience, and going out there and tackling this topic. That's, to me, is a no-brainer, and you guys would have one heck of an audience. Adam, let me ask you, though, let's go prior to being a part of the SIU team. What really got you interested before you met Ted and Debbie and everybody? What got you interested?
Sure. I would say ever since, you know, just being a little kid and just seeing movies like E.T. I mean, I was obsessed with that movie growing up, first off, and just, you know, things like that just kind of opens up your mind as a child, and just, you know, actually, whenever I was a little young kid, just watching documentaries on TV, just like my brothers would be in the room or something, I'd walk in and something with UFOs, and I remember specifically some children talking about experience with aliens, and that really, at the age, kind of freaked me out. But then I started looking into it more and more to try to understand it, and that really got me interested. But I think the main thing overall was when I was probably about 7 or 8 years of age, my dad talked about a close encounter that he had back in the early to mid-70s, and I guess it was around 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning when he was going to work. I guess he worked at a radio station in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and he was driving on this secluded road, and out of the blue, basically this object that resembled like the Colossus-type Ferris wheel thing, and it was hovering over his vehicle for a number of minutes, and followed him for a couple miles, and took off. And, you know, just from hearing that from my dad and trusting him as a scientist, you know, you can't get more credible than that.
Yeah, really.
It's just, that's, you know, something that really pushed me into this. So I credit it probably mainly to that, but also just to being interested and open-minded.
And you obviously are very well aware, we saw each other again at the 2007 MUFON Symposium, that you really are one of, if not the youngest guy who's out there really investigating, really in the field. I mean, there are some youngsters that are involved, but, I mean, you're really out there, you're pushing, you're doing your thing. Let me ask you, now that you've joined the SIU team, you're a part of it, let's go back to your first investigation. What was that, and what'd you guys do?
Wow, I would say, it's kind of a hard one. For the most part, it's been just, you know, kind of learning from just everyone, like mm-hmm. even just from you, and just kind of getting myself thrown into this. But I guess probably just actually doing these investigations with Ted, because before this, it's been more of just kind of like a hobby kind of thing, mm-hmm. where I'm just kind of trying to find facts out for myself, but now it's really trying to get this research and get it out there for everyone to see. So I would say probably just within the last year or so, I would say just doing these investigations in the locations that we're doing, you know, like the Marley Woods. And so I think that's probably been my first one, is with Ted and then with the rest of the team. And couldn't get a better start than that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you think when you first started getting out into the field?
Wow, I mean, I couldn't actually believe it. For the longest time, I had no idea how to become a ufologist growing up. And, you know, I've been like, man, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be. Regardless, you know, I can have another profession. I can do whatever. but I just really would like to do this with time I have. Mm-hmm. And just being out there with them and finally finding my way to that, it was just like, you know, it's just like, what the heck? How did this happen?
Did you see something in the field as well while you were out there, or was this mainly like physical trace evidence cases?
I haven't seen anything as of yet. I've been out to the site a few times. It's kind of hard to determine because, I mean, these things, you know, who knows what schedule or whatever they're following. So it's just like they just appear at will, you know. And I haven't had the privilege of seeing anything yet, but I've seen the physical effects of these objects and what they've done, what they've left, such as, you know, as like a circular ring on the ground, which is believed to be a landing site, and also gates which were pushed down by an unseen force, and hearing the witnesses, you know, talk about their experiences, and just hearing all this stuff, you know, it's just fascinating. So
now, are these recent cases that you guys are currently involved in, or are we going back to a lot of cases that have been in Ted's files for a while, or kind of a mixture of both?
It's definitely a mixture of both. I mean, what we do is we the information that we've gathered over the years that Ted's gathered, and we find new witnesses all the time because people are always talking, and so we go and investigate, we go and ask, go find new witnesses, go talk and find their experiences from the past, or maybe we hear new stuff, you know, that just happened last month, like what I'm going to talk about here pretty soon. And so we, you know, it's just kind of a mixture of both, and it's very exciting because it's definitely different from what you're used to.
And you guys are obviously documenting all this, both by video, as you can tell from the 15-minute video on www.ufophysical.com. But I'm guessing, and I don't know for sure, but audio tapes of people with interviews and so on, and you're archiving everything online.
Well, so far we don't have any of the audio stuff up and recorded, but we have everything... where we're getting everything in text format.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have like a diary of one of the guys who's at the site, and he's been living there for pretty much since he's been growing up, and he talks about his experiences, he diaries, I mean, he records everything.
And this is one of your active case files right now?
Yeah, this is actually the area we're going to be going to, and it's on his farm where this stuff's occurring. And so he details everything he finds, you know, hears, sees, and so we have that stuff, and we're putting that stuff onto the website as we speak, and you can find that under the SIU files. If you go in there and you just look around, I mean, there's a ton of stuff on here, but we have that kind of stuff on the website, and
this is the Marley Woods Project?
Yeah, the Marley Woods Project, and also a number of different cases and past investigations that Ted has researched.
And it's amazing what you guys have chronicled here, because on top of what Ted has done in his history, over 3,180 reports of these trace evidence cases. And for those of you who missed the show with Ted Phillips, go on back to the Black Vault Radio archives. It's a very interesting show, and Ted is just an unbelievable person, but also just a fantastic researcher. He joined me and told me a little bit about his research. And keep your eyes on the History Channel. I did a one-hour show with him that's already aired, but it re-airs quite often. They ultimately called it Alien Encounters, which I didn't call it that. We never talked about aliens, but keep your eyes open for that, because it was a very, very cool show. UFOphysical.com, Adam Johnson's the guest. This is Black Vault Radio. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr. We're talking to Adam Johnson about the Special Investigations Unit, the SIU team, for the Center for Physical Trace Research. It's a little bit of a mouthful, Adam. Did I have that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for joining me and taking time out of your busy, not only school schedule, but busy investigation schedule with the SIU, being a part of the SIU team. Now, let me ask you, you talked about this case that you're going to investigate this weekend. Please, if I can, let me ask you for more details about it. What exactly is going on there, and what do you guys plan to do?
Sure. Well, let's see. Basically, I guess Ted got involved with the Marley Woods location back in 98 when he just found out about it through MUFON. Just, you know, people reported it, the sightings going on there. And basically, Ted was contacted through MUFON. And so he became the basically lead investigator on the case. And so he's been investigating this for well over 10 years himself. Basically, there have been balls of light that have been sighted here, you know, mass sightings where there have been many people out on the site, you know, close to 50 people at a time,
mm-hmm.
that have witnessed, you know, several objects, you know, one object, as many as 100 objects. So, I mean, it's all over the place there. It kind of resembles the stuff that's actually occurring, what's going on at that Skinwalker Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've always compared it to, because, I mean, there's so many different weird things going on there. You have balls of light, you have cattle mutilations, you have circular rings found in the crops, in the fields. You have the unseen forces, the physical encounters that push down gates, that have destroyed video cameras, that have destroyed video footage, that have locked car doors on people, that have actually injured people by pushing them down. So, I mean, there is a wealth of, you know, just a variety of different things that are going on there. And specifically, what we're trying to do right now, like this weekend, we're going to go out there and, you know, we'll be talking with the different witnesses out there as usual, just to see if anything else has come up or anything new. And also we'll be just the area trying to see if we find anything different going on out there. And of course, we're also going to set up lots and lots of different video equipment and hopefully capture some of this stuff on tape. So,
you see, this is very exciting to me. And forgive me if I sound like a little kid, but it's very exciting because it's very rare where you at least hear about it, where these a team of people like you guys are going out and doing this. I'm anxious to see the results of this weekend. What are you guys going to do with the data? Do you automatically put it online? Are you going to create a report? Or
We actually the SIU files on the website at ufophysical.com, under the main menu, we have an SIU files link, and there we detail our monthly reports, or whenever we're able to get out to the site. So right now we have like monthly cases, September 2007 or April through June 2007. And so under there, we'll usually try to, as soon as possible, try to update, you know, if anything new's happened, or just kind of just get something so people can see, you know, what we've done.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to have to bring you guys back, meaning the whole SIU team, onto Black Vault Radio to hear what happened. I urge everybody who's listening, ufophysical.com, go to the site. There's a ton of information to download. The particular project that we're talking about, click on Marley Woods Project on the main menu or go into the SIU files. It's in there as well. Lots of pictures, lots of updates, and all that good stuff. I'm also anxious to see if you guys catch anything on video. Adam, what do you think the likelihood of is that?
Wow, I mean, it's hard to say. I remember hearing from Ted, it took him at least 6 or 7 different times before his first sighting, so that's what I think will be about my fourth or fifth time out there. So who knows, hopefully we'll see something. I think actually this month and next month have historically been the most active months, so we're bound to see something soon.
Now, is it safe to assume Marley Woods is in Missouri, or are you guys traveling out of state to do this?
No, yeah, this is in Missouri. It's a rural area in Missouri. We can't really give away the location because
understand.
Obviously, yeah. But, yeah, it's a secluded area. And it really looks like somewhere where something like this would definitely occur because, you know, not many people are around, and just, mm-hmm. it's just definitely seems like a prime territory for this stuff.
Very cool. This is Adam. I'm sorry. This is John Greenwald. You're listening to Adam Johnson on the Black Vault Radio. Check it out online, ufophysical.com. Very cool stuff they're doing. Make sure you check it out. We'll be right back.
You're listening to BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr. Listening to Adam Johnson. Check him out online. His SIU team, very cool group of people going out there investigating UFO encounters and hopes to get into the area before something happens. Very cool approach. And hopefully they are going to find some stuff on one of their projects called the Marley Woods Project. Go to ufophysical.com. Check it out. It's very interesting stuff. Adam, thank you so much for joining me on Black Vault Radio. You guys are doing great work. The Marley Woods Project sounds fascinating. You guys have to give me a call. We'll try and get you on for updates on the air, but I'm also just curious from my own mind what you guys find this weekend. Maybe we could just bring you on for a couple minutes to give a few-minute update on if you guys saw anything, what you saw. But I know that that's not your only case that the SIU team is pursuing right now. What else are you guys up to?
Sure. Well, actually, Ted Phillips last month was contacted by a friend of his within the Branson area, and there was a UFO sighting there. Basically, it was September 1st, 2007. It was about 8:47 p.m., where a mother and her son at the age of 14 were driving home on a remote secondary road at about 10 miles northwest of Branson, Missouri. As they made a curve bearing northeast, the sun noticed two brilliant circular lights across a field through the right passenger window. The pure light glowed together horizontally and hovering not far above the field. Here the mother saw them through the upper passenger side of the windshield, and the sun rolled down the front passenger side window and had a clear view of the objects. The mother then slowed the vehicle and continued to drive for about 500 feet beyond the initial sighting. Then they stopped. She turned the engine and lights off and continued to watch the two lights hover directly beyond the right side of the car. There's absolutely no sound at all, and in this remote area where the sighting was, the slightest sound would definitely have been detected. There was no motion by the lights, which remained an estimated 6 feet apart in a horizontal fashion, and where they hovered above a large tree and were some 80 feet above the tree. And later Ted found that the intersecting bearings between taken from the witnesses indicated distance from the witnesses to the lights to be less than 700 feet. So it was a pretty close encounter. The distance between the circular white lights never changed. The night was very clear and calm. They tried to see a shadow or outline of something behind the lights. The area behind or around the lights did not black out the bright stars. At no time during the observations did they see anything but the two lights. They also estimated the diameter of each light to be much larger than automobile headlights. They were pure white and perhaps 2 feet in diameter. Suddenly, the light on the right side elevated slightly, and the lights moved rapidly on a bearing of 254 degrees from a distance of 2,000 plus feet, disappearing at a point behind and below dense trees. In other words, they went from motionless to behind trees over 2,000 feet away in less than 10 seconds. As they traveled, the flight paths of these lights were within 500 feet of the car at a close point. They were looking at the side and bottom of the lights, and they looked exactly the same as the front view. They crossed the road behind them. The rear of the lights presented the same configuration. Their shape never changed, and the distance and behavior between the lights never changed. They had the appearance of two brightly illuminated spheres. They were brilliant, but did not hurt the eyes. They never cast a light on a tree or the ground below. No other lights, no dark shapes seen, no sound, no air disturbance. As the mother began to start the car again, her son, at the age of 16, drove up beside her and asked why they were sitting in the road. They told him that they had seen what they had seen, and he laughed, and he could see that they were serious. They looked in the direction where the lights were last seen and continued home. They drove home on a road with many sharp curves, taking 6 to 8 minutes to reach a high hill. As they crested the hill, they saw two brilliant white lights ahead and slightly to the left of the road. They could see the lights through the tops of the trees to the left and down the road. Ted later discovered that the lights were over 3,000 feet away, measuring in a straight line from the hill where they could see them. They drove faster with Corey following behind in this car. That was the 16-year-old son. Finally, they made a very sharp turn to the left, and 700 feet directly ahead, they saw two lights hovering just off the right side of the road. The mother stopped her car 50 feet from the lights, while the older son pulled off the right side of the road parallel to the lights and 20 feet horizontally from their position. He was hanging out the window of the car looking up at the lights, which were less than 100 feet above the ground over a large tree. At this very close point, none of the three witnesses could see any dark shape that the lights could be attached to. They were the same distance apart as before and appeared to be 2 feet in diameter. Even at a point less than 100 feet from the lights, there was no sound and no disturbance of the air below. There was no disturbance in the tree, the top area being less than 50 feet from the lights, and no time was there any interference with the vehicles. 30 seconds or less after the arrival of the two cars, the lights went from hovering to a very high speed, moving away horizontally on a bearing of 305 degrees, and disappeared behind trees 600 feet away in 2 to 3 seconds, which is unheard of in terms of our current technology. Another interesting fact, finding made by Ted, was discovering a field measuring approximately 42 feet by 32 feet. Within this field, at a point beneath the hovering lights position, Ted found a circular area, I believe about 9 feet in diameter. Within the circle, the plants and soil appeared wilted and dehydrated. The area in the center was green and lush, which is very interesting. However, at this point in time, Ted mentioned it'd be probably unwise to try and make a direct connection between the area and the lights, but he did mention that he took some soil and plant samples for analysis. The soil and plant effects were 1 foot wide, and the soil was completely dry.
Now, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I want everybody who's listening to go to ufophysical.com, because if you go into the SIU case, SIU files under the September 2007 case files, This is the case file that's currently up, right? You've got a digital simulation of the lights.
This is up.
Over the tree. And the pictures that you reference are also online. So I want to make sure that everybody who's listening, and if you're listening via theblackvault.com, feel free to surf while you're listening. Also make sure if you do have the Black Vault toolbar, not a problem. Go ahead and go to ufophysical.com. It won't interrupt your connection here. And you can download these pictures, the map of the area. Adam, and when you're done with the story, because it's fascinating, I want you to kind of describe the area near Branson, because I've been there. I got to travel there and do a lecture in Kimberling City, Missouri, which I know is quite a little ways from Branson, but I want you to describe this area yourself as well.
Sure.
But you can see, which may or may not be connected to these lights, exactly what you're talking about with the plants being... possibly modified or something, which definitely coincides with many of Ted Phillips' case files. So forgive me for interrupting, but I wanted to make sure everybody could view those photos as you're talking about it. Has
sure.
there been analysis on the soil samples as of yet, or is that still kind of in the works?
Yeah, that's still pending.
Mm-hmm.
Still trying to get that done. But yeah, it's very interesting because of the I guess there has been like there was like a 3-day rain period,
mm-hmm.
which ended that very morning, which is, I guess deposited over 5 inches of moisture in the area. But this soil was completely dry. So, and with Ted being experienced with all this stuff, you know, he made the discovery of it, and he was pretty intrigued. And he took the samples, so hopefully we'll get an analysis of that and determine to see if there's maybe a potential connection between the two.
Absolutely, and on a completely different side note. If you guys get any more rain, can you send it over here to California? We're in dire need of it.
You guys are.
And as you and I talk, there is, I mentioned this at the very top of the show. I know you were on hold, but as we were speaking, I mean, all of California is like, Southern California is like a blaze. It really is the most amazing thing coming home to my home studio here to record this interview. I mean, it was just insane to see the effects to these fires. I know I'm getting off on a tangent, but this is all we're hearing about in Southern California. And to be quite honest, it's all we're seeing. So it makes sense that I'm completely staring off direction. So I apologize. Let me get back to the case in point here. Sounds like a fascinating case, definitely work in progress. UFOphysical.com has some of the case file already up online. I'm anxious to see more. I'm sure many other people that are listening and viewing your site are looking forward to seeing it. But Adam, I have to switch directions a little bit because
sure.
you guys also have a section on the site that has intrigued me. Ted and I talked about it briefly, and I want you to give me your interpretation of it. If you go to ufophysical.com, Project Moonshaft in the main menu, if you click on this, it's an extraordinary history, historical story and historical narrative, I should say, with a bizarre twist. Let me ask you to describe this case to me, and you guys are obviously still pursuing this, and rightly so. Tell me why. Tell me about it.
Sure. Basically, during World War II, Anton Horak, he was a captain in the underground resistance in Slovakia, and while fighting the Germans in a north-central area of Slovakia, he and his men had to retreat deep into a cave and for protection. And basically, I guess, I can't remember how long they're in there for, but I believe a week or so, maybe within weeks. They found a large, smooth, black half-moon object, and it had mathematically curved cliffs. It was so old that stalactites and stalagmites grew over it. So, and also on the ground, under the limestone dust in the area, referred to as pavement by Horak,
mm-hmm.
was an ancient fossilized tooth from a cave bear. So where they found this was, you know, very old, thousands of years back. That's what this object represents, is something that's dated back thousands of years.
And do you also know approximately how many thousands of years? Approximately?
Well, tens of thousands, I would say.
Okay.
I remember Ted talking about the stalagmites being very big and growing over this object, so, and that takes thousands and thousands of years just for those things to grow a foot.
Okay.
So, tens of thousands of years, I'd say. So this thing definitely represents some sort of ancient technology, or possibly maybe even extraterrestrial. Who knows? It's just very remarkable. And Anton Horak even described a machine or generator-like noise coming from underneath this object when he put his ear to the ground. So that's very interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, especially with the given age of whatever this is. Now, is the SIU team thinking about going out there?
Oh, yeah. We're a group of five of us. We're trying to definitely get the funding for it. I'm not sure how much of that's going to, you know, be, but
mm-hmm.
We've talked to you, and we're talking to whoever, try to get a video crew or something to try to get out there and actually get this stuff, you know, shown to the public as it's happening.
Well, hopefully we can do something like that for you. And of course, I wish I had the money because I just hand it over to you guys and see what happens. What's interesting about this is that, you know, this isn't in the backyard of your location in Missouri. This is way in the Tatra Mountains in Slovakia. Definitely
exactly.
A little bit of a rugged terrain over there, and mm-hmm. would definitely be a little bit of a hike for you. But I think that it would be absolutely well worth it. And how are you guys, I mean, are you making headway to get the private funding? How is that kind of working out for you guys?
Yeah, Ted said that he's definitely got some different options coming his way, and it's definitely looking more positive than it has. And, yeah, we're definitely just hoping, you know, because there's people definitely showing interest, and there's people that have actually seen the website since it's been up since I guess mid-August or late mm-hmm. August, and people in Slovakia have contacted Ted just because this website's been up.
Wow.
And, yeah, so it's very intriguing, and I think, I know Ted mentioned he's actually good friends with John Ashcroft, and he said that he was going to be setting up a meeting with him to talk to him about possibly, you know, getting some support over there in Slovakia, and so we'll see how things go, and I definitely, anyone that's wanting to try and, you know, get behind a project or anything like that that's interested in ancient artifacts, UFOs, whatever it may be, something exotic, history, I would say definitely look into funding this because it's going to be groundbreaking once we find this.
Yeah, absolutely. And that story really does have it all. It's got the history and it's got that intrigue of what could that object be? So, you know, I'm here to help you guys. I hope I can help out. And for anybody who's listening, if they can help out as well, please, by all means, ufophysical.com. I know that there's a contact link on the left-hand side on the main menu. You've got Ted Phillips' contact information, Adam's contact information, Tom's, Debbie's, Chuck's, the whole SIU team. So very cool. Check that out. Adam, I've got to ask you, this has always been a hot topic debate here on the Black Vault Radio of why, and now I've got somebody of the young age of 21 years old. The topic of debate has been, why aren't there more people our age involved? And now I'm saying our age. I'm getting old. I'm 26 now, so I've started this when I was 15, so I've surpassed that. It's good to see somebody young coming in. But why do you think that there aren't more young people out there in the UFO field?
I would say personally, I think people are just occupied with other things. I would say, well, first off, you know, people usually my age, I'm not trying to stereotype anyone or anything, mm-hmm. but it seems like people are usually more interested in, you know, just sports, maybe just social life, whatever it may be. I'm interested in that stuff too, but I guess I'm able to look past that. And mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm just interested in history, interested in the unknown. And, so it's kind of hard to say. It seems like when you single out someone and you talk about this stuff, usually they're interested. But when you're like with a group of college students, mm-hmm. like at school, and mm-hmm. this topic is brought up, it's instantly ridiculed or
yeah.
laughed at. And
mm-hmm.
it's pretty strange. But usually when you're on your own with someone, usually they're pretty interested and they're pretty open to it. But
I'm surprised all the time of who's seen one. At work, I just heard a story the other day of somebody telling me that they had seen something bizarre. And I love telling this story because and I've only been able to tell it once because it just happened. But I actually told them about MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and the case file database that they have online, and told them, hey, go look it up, because this sighting happened when about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when they were much younger. And sure enough, they actually found the case. Somebody else saw it and reported it to MUFON. I thought it was very cool. I want to send it to James and John Schussler, both the former and current international director of MUFON, and just kind of tell them, because I think that's kind of a cool connection when you've got somebody who had recollected something from 15, 20 years ago and goes to the MUFON database and sure enough finds somebody else who's actually seen it. I just thought it was a pretty cool tie-in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Very interesting.
Absolutely. We're talking to Adam Johnson. The website, ufophysical.com, has all the information that you would want about the SIU team, and very CSI, let me tell you, not to go too inner Hollywood lingo, but very CSI. It's very cool stuff. You guys taking applications for other people who want to be involved, or do you guys kind of have your core team locked and you guys are it?
I, for the most part, for right now, just the core team. Maybe in the future, you know, I'm sure we'll be looking for, you know, more people interested, people that are interested in, you know, investigating scientifically the UFO phenomenon. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, just keep your eyes and ears open and just see what happens in the near future.
Very cool. UFOphysical.com. Stay tuned. We're unfortunately almost coming to an end here on the Black Vault Radio. It just kind of flew by. Stay tuned. There's a couple more minutes coming up right after this. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr. We've been talking to Adam Johnson of the SIU team, part of Ted Phillips Center for Physical Trace Research. They're doing some pretty amazing work. Check them out online, ufophysical.com. Adam, this hour just kind of flew by. I figured it would because this topic is so fascinating, but I'm just so intrigued because you guys are doing so much work, so much active work. You're out in the field. We're not talking about stuff three decades ago. You guys are in the field this weekend. You're out there with cases that are happening right now. One thing we didn't talk about, though, and I did want to touch on a little bit, is this dive team that you talk about. It's the United States' only dive team that's going out there and pursuing USOs, unidentified submersible objects. Now, is it safe to say that this is the only team in the world? I haven't heard of this. Or is there one overseas that I've just not heard
of? Yeah, this is the only team. I mean, yeah, this is it. Tom and Debbie, Tom Ferrario, Debbie Ziegelmeyer, they're the creators of it. And also Chuck Ziekowski, Debbie Ziegelmeyer's brother. They're our divers. Mm-hmm. And hopefully maybe one day I'll be a diver.
Are you taking courses to be a certified diver?
No, not yet.
Not yet?
I'm definitely interested in it, maybe someday.
Well, very cool. Well, good luck. Be safe. Don't tell anybody. I don't know how to swim, so unfortunately, I won't be able to tag along on any of those events. Let me ask you, though, are they out there diving, or do you guys have open cases right now, or still kind of pursuing the appropriate direction?
Yeah, we're trying to find different areas. there's been different events where objects have been reported going in and out of ponds, lakes, rivers, you know. So whenever something like that comes up, we definitely try to get them in there and try to get them down in there and try to find some evidence, you know, of anything, residue, just take samples of the water, whatever. So it's definitely a great way to really just try to find something alternatively,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of just looking outside into the field and whatnot. So diving into the water is definitely very interesting. And I've also heard, I guess it's a high number. You had Carl Feintown, I think, what is it, like 70% or
mm-hmm.
a high number are usually water-related sightings. So,
yeah,
we're bound to definitely find something.
And
yeah,
absolutely. And Carl was just on the show. Carl Feint was just on the show here on Black Vault Radio about 2 weeks ago, I believe, all on the topic of underwater UFOs. But it's fascinating to hear that a team is really pursuing this because they really do need that supporting evidence, and it sounds like you guys are really pursuing it. As we kind of wind up here on the Black Vault Radio, Adam, let me ask you before we do close, is there a book in your future? Is there? Are you hopping on the lecture circuit, or are you just going to be pursuing this in the field, hoping to find the truth?
I'd say definitely eventually I'd like to get a book out there. I actually spoke at the last year, or at this year's 2007, the last Eureka Springs UFO conference on the Sunday session there. I spoke there. I think Ted said something about getting the team trying to speak at the Aztec UFO conference.
Great. Mm-hmm.
That's in March, I believe. And maybe at the Eureka Springs, I might have another presentation ready to go or something. That's kind of fun. I like doing that. And we're trying to put together that the SIU DVD and trying to get a lot of this stuff out there so everyone can see. So
very
I guess
cool.
Stay tuned for that.
Well, you guys are doing great work. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule. And make sure you keep with the books, but keep with your investigations, too. You guys are doing some great stuff. So ufophysical.com. Adam, thank you so much again.
Thanks again.
You have a good one. And thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next time right here on BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. We'll see you then.